Okay, now we're recording. So welcome to Teach Wonder. Yes, welcome to Teach Wonder, a podcast hosted by Ashley O'Neill and Julie Cunningham.
Welcome back to Teach Wonder. We are in the middle of our series, From Theory to Practice, where we interview CMU alum who are working in schools across Michigan. So, stick with me for a minute. So I'm a book lover, and one of my recent reads was science fiction, and in it, there is this character who's a beetle. And her vision is different from the humans that she lives with. She sees fractured kaleidoscopic images, so tons of microscopic details that allow her to see pieces of a whole. She then layers what she gleans from those details with the sound she hears, the smell she gets, and other sensory input to create an idea of what the whole is. So she never sees the whole building. She sees hundreds of small pieces of that building that she then has to put together to create what she knows to be a building. And really, that's not that different from how we construct our own realities. So much of what we know is this way. It's a million small, little stories and experiences and anecdotes that create our own reality. If I told you that a kindergarten teacher has a vastly different day than a high school choir teacher, you'd agree, hands down. But what about two fifth grade teachers working 20 miles away? So I was a special education major, and at CMU, that meant that I did a semester of student teaching in a special education placement and a semester in a general education placement. And for my special education placement, I was in a classroom of third through fifth graders. My placement was just under an hour away from where I was living, so I drove with another student teacher. We'll call her Allie. And she was in the other special education classroom in that building. An hour is a long time each way, especially when you don't know each other that well. So I drove my PT Cruiser. Yes, that was my car. I would drive down winding back roads, and Allie would help me watch for deer, and we would talk. And those conversations did a few things. They were mostly about school, and so they really mostly just pointed out how different our student teaching experiences were. So I was teaching by the second day, and I had fully taken over by the end of the first week. Allie observed the first week and then slowly took over portions of the day until she and her teacher had a balanced co-teaching setup. She never took over the classroom all the way. So my teacher thought that the only way that I could learn to engage and fully handle the pressure and decision-making involved in a special education classroom would be to do it. And Allie's host teacher saw a second expert in the room as a way to make her classroom twice as effective, that her students would really benefit from this dreamy setup of having more small group attention, more teachers able to co-teach with a general education teacher. And honestly, both of them had good points and were coming from good places. I learned so much about relationship building with students, making split-second decisions to de-escalate stressful situations, and to support my students' academic needs during their inclusion in general education and social studies and science. Allie had a lot more practice creating focused practice activities for small groups. So she experienced a classroom model that included multiple adults and practiced making complicated schedules of pulling out and pushing in and grouping students for targeted work on their goals. And this is similar to what she would later do in a special education classroom that was supported by several paraprofessionals. One of us co-wrote IEPs and sat in on parent meetings. The other one took on the day-to-day of the caseload, which freed the classroom teacher up to complete assessments for the IEPs, and ultimately saw a lot less of the admin side of the gig. Allie and I sat together with our host teachers during staff meetings, and the district provided planning time, and we got to hear how these two special education teachers collaborated and made sense of big picture planning time. And then there was the time that Allie and I spent in the car, 2 hours of our own debrief every day. And that honestly doubled my experience hearing about Allie's, because the truth is, our individual student teaching experiences were really incomplete, and we were teaching 20 feet away from each other. It's hard to get right. How to encompass a whole occupation in a semester. And then, once we're in the classroom, it's not easy to collect more examples and more observations of other teachers' other experiences. So it becomes really easy to become entrenched in our reality because it's the one that's right in front of our own faces. It's one of the reasons that I appreciate conversations like this. I think that talking to other teachers about what it's like for them is an underrated form of PD. It's a way for me to collect more detail, reality, challenges, and lived experiences that are like or very different from my own. This series is a cast of characters that are in different places and focuses across Michigan. I particularly think that it matters when we think about teachers from different age groups. And I say that as someone who's kind of sitting a bit in the middle. I definitely would not be considered a new teacher. I definitely could have a lot more experience in my life. And all the teachers that we're hearing from here are relatively new. And I think that that matters. Sometimes we look at our younger colleagues and can think that it's our job to impart wisdom on them, right? That we have all of this experience, all of these practice things to share. And that is absolutely true. And these younger teachers have a lot of things to share with us, how they're approaching this changing educational climate, how they think about students and behavior and learning, the things that they have learned in their undergrad programs and PD that they're doing, the fresh approach that their own lived experience, which is different from ours for generational reasons, brings to the table. And hearing their stories has added some important layers to what I know about education in 2024.
My name is Maddie Bergen. I teach Algebra 2 at Shepherd High School.
Nice. And you have just the one math class, huh?
Yes, yeah. I have five or four class periods a day. They're all Algebra 2, and they're all the same level, just general grade math.
Has it been that way since you've been at Shepherd, Maddie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been, so this is the same position that I was in student teaching, and my host teacher went on maternity leave near the end of my student teaching. So then I finished the school year as a long-term sub. So I was also in geometry for a bit during my student teaching, but since I started full-time 3 years ago, I've just been doing Algebra 2.
Okay. I can remember I used to do that with high school biology. And one of the nice things about that is that ability to sort of tweak your lesson. Mm-hmm. As that, right, to make changes as the day goes on, like, is that good for you?
That is good. I feel like, and I feel bad for my first hour sometimes, but it's always a little better by the end of the day than in first hour.
Or that every once in a while your schedule changes so that your first hour actually becomes your last class, and then, right, like, if I don't know why that would happen, but if you have a half day or something, and you don't
like
get
an
first hour
or something,
Yeah. Every once in a while, they end up being the top, right? Being the one that gets the lesson last, but not very often.
No, I call them the guinea pigs sometimes. They're the ones who get the first iteration, and then it just gets better. But now that I've been doing this for 3 years, I feel like even the first time is at least I've done it before.
Right. And if you think of it the other way around, you're the freshest, right? In the morning, like you're the probably... Mm-hmm. The most energetic, unless you really dislike mornings.
No, I don't mind the morning.
Yeah.
Now, Algebra 2, does that mean mostly sophomores and juniors?
Yep, I have mostly juniors and then advanced sophomores. So they get put when they're in middle school, I think 7th or 8th grade, they can choose to do the advanced math track if they're like a high math student. So in 8th grade, they would move up to Algebra 1, and then they do Geometry Algebra 2 a year ahead of their most of their graduating class. And then after Algebra 2, they can do pre-calc, stats, and calculus through dual enrollment through mid.
Nice. So, Maddie, we're wondering, first of all, if being in the classroom has met your expectations.
I think yes and no. I think I really like being in the classroom. I really like doing math every day. I feel like one of the expectations that I had or that a lot of people have when they're going through like the education program is that, you know, like we have all of these new innovative ways and things that will help us teach. And then you get to the classroom and there really are just some kids who like don't have high enough math skills to be like doing that kind of stuff, or people who just don't really like the class or don't like math might have bad attitudes. So it's harder, I think, to do like some of the things were, I'm thinking about like my math education classes in college, and we're doing all these hands-on self-discovery things. And I was expecting like, yes, these kids are going to discover math themselves. And that hasn't always been true. Some kids need a lot more support than others, and aren't really able when they come to class, aren't really able to do some high level like discovery things because they just don't have the skills necessary to do that. So I'd say a lot more catching up than I thought I might have to be doing, which isn't necessarily bad. It's just you have to do more work to get to the things that you want to do.
It's Ashley, just jumping in here. That feeling of needing to catch kids up. This is the case, and it has come up in just about every interview in this series. And I'd like to frame it in a way that I've been thinking about since having these conversations. So in teacher training, we talk a lot about lesson plans. We write a lot of lesson plans. And most schools provide a curriculum that provide a plethora of lesson plans. And what I've noticed with all of our interviews is this discussion about a skill that we don't talk about as much in teacher training. And that is how teachers must dial in on the skills that students have and match lessons to meet the needs of each particular kid. And how to navigate that tug of war that happens between the pacing guide and your curriculum and those blessed lesson plans. And the students who are sitting in front of your class, where they are with where the curriculum says they should be, and where you, as their educator, hope to get them.
Yeah, but other expectations. I was expecting to have a wide variety of students, and I do. Like, I have people who are really high and high level and good at math and love doing math. And then I have a bunch of students who know that this is their last required math course that they have to take. So they're just really looking forward to getting it out of the way. And then they can never do a calculus or pre-calc class again. So that way I was expecting, and that's true. And I like it. I like having the kids who don't really love math that much too. I just feel like they're different than me. So I like talking to them.
Sure. Do you feel like that's a little bit of a, and I know we'll ask you a question in a little bit about challenges, but like a personal challenge to like help them appreciate math a little bit more?
Yeah, I would say when I was looking at the questions too, that was like the first challenge that I thought of was sometimes like kids just don't like math. And no matter how many times I try to like do something more fun or look at it in a different way, to them, it still might just be the activity we're doing in math class. So that is a challenge sometimes to keep people interested, especially in Algebra 2. There are just a lot of things that we learn that are Algebra 2 standards that are very theoretical, like algebra topics that don't have as clear of like a real world application with them. And those are always really hard because nobody wants to learn how to do something that they see no purpose for in the real world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you're building off of, I feel like you're building off of attitudes or like identities that they've been working on for a really long time. I remember when I moved from first grade to middle school, I was really struck at how much their identity had already been shaped in, like, I like this, I don't like this, I do this, I don't do this. And I think it only gets more concrete as they get older. And I imagine that by the time they get to Algebra 2, they've kind of made up their minds about some things. And that's hard to change a mind that's been made up in, like, I don't know, the last 10 years, right?
Yeah, it is really hard. But sometimes when it does happen, on the rare occasion when it does happen and someone like changes their mind a little bit, that's like yes, like we made it. Like if this kid told me that this is the first time in their life that they've ever gotten an A on a math test, or the first time in their life that they've ever like enjoyed what they were doing in math class, I'm like, we did something right here.
Yeah, right. Right. So how can we replicate that?
Right. Yeah. Tell all your friends that you really love doing this math. They can change their ideas too.
Yeah, great. Any other expectations that you can think of?
No, I guess I, in college or like going through the education program, there were just a lot of things that once I got to actually being a teacher that I don't know, things like evaluation and all of the work that I have to do as part of my job that isn't really about teaching like it is and it isn't. So, I mean, not in a bad way, but I just feel like I was expecting a lot more prepping for teaching and sometimes having to do like, I don't know, just all of the extra work about like actually being a teacher. It just feels like a lot sometimes, but not in a bad way, just something that I didn't have a lot of knowledge before I started actually being a full-time teacher.
Yeah. And I bet those things don't get talked a lot of, right? Because you spend so much time on curriculum or classroom management or or pedagogy, right? That you don't really talk about those other administrative things.
Yeah, like what are your other job responsibilities going to be once you're in the classroom?
Yeah. Yeah.
So. That makes sense. Have there been, I know you mentioned a little bit like those small moments when kids change their mind just a little bit on math. It's always a big win for you. But have there been any other highlights that you can think about?
Yes. Well, even outside of math, so one of the things that I thought of like in highlights is just getting to know kids. I really enjoyed doing that. Like, I feel like starting the year not really knowing and then building these relationships as I go is always a highlight. I work with a couple clubs at Shepherd too. So I have work with the chess club and like, that's always a highlight. Like, kids started this club. They asked me to be an advisor because they needed an adult person to watch them. And just throughout that. So for a few years, we've been doing that. And that was like an unexpected highlight. I never thought I would be the chess club advisor, but now I help these kids who have created their new group and have all these plans. We've gone on some trips to do like a competition and things like that. So that's always really cool. Like, I just think it's fun that they chose me to help them with this and that they like get to do this stuff in school outside of their actual classes. So I really like that. I also work with the band sometimes. I've been in band since fifth grade and I still play in a concert band. So even though I'm not like a band teacher, I was hoping for something that I might get to do with music in school. So I work with the marching band in the summer sometimes, and I'll help them out during during band outside of school things. Like, I've taken pet bands to games or to events at the school in the evening and things like that. So that's always a highlight, just that I get to do the other things that I like that aren't just math. And there aren't really many places that other than a school where I can work with the jazz band or something like that. So that's always a highlight for me when I get to do stuff that isn't necessarily my job as a math teacher, but is something that I get to do because I'm a teacher here at the school.
Did you play chess before chess club?
Yes, a little. I was not, I didn't know any official strategies or things like that. Even now still, I tell them like, you're probably a better chess player than me. Some of them are. But really it was one girl who, you know, she's really passionate about chess and good at chess, and she wanted to start a club. And I was the teacher that was willing to do it. So we've been kind of learning as a group. We use some online resources and things to actually learn strategy. But there are a few kids who are really into learning that stuff on their own time, and they'll help other people too. So, yeah, I played, but not really like... I wasn't good enough to actually coach them.
That's cool. That's nice that you agreed to do it and you're learning along with them, I think. That's probably really meaningful for them.
So now, and we've kind of evolved. We do different games now too, but we'll play chess and we'll watch like strategy videos. And when we went to a competition last year, we had to learn how to do the official notation to record your moves and that stuff. So we'll sit down and practice it together and watch the videos of people who actually know what they're talking about, teach us how to do it.
And I gotta believe the band instructor is really happy to have a second teacher to help out with those things, because that is a big undertaking, marching band.
Yeah, and the band director that we have here at Shepherd was new last year, I think. So last year was his first year. And so, I mean, he got his foot in the door and kind of was all hectic in his first year. But then this past year, I obviously went to introduce myself to him and told him that, like, I do band and I know things about music and I play the trombone and would love to help with anything that you want. So during marching season, he asked me if I would do, like, I was the instructor for the brass instruments. So I would run sectionals and things during marching season with them and help them on the field learn their field show moves. But it makes his job a lot easier when there's someone else that can take some of that responsibility away.
Yeah, I bet. And I think you weren't done maybe with your highlights when I asked you about chess clubs. So I'm sorry if I interrupted you.
I also work with another club that the students made. It started as a committee in our leadership class, but some students last year began like a diversity club or like a diversity committee in the leadership class. And they decided that they wanted to make that like a club. And they asked me to help them with that. The basket is good.
Thank you.
Just coming in to turn an assignment into the basket.
That's awesome.
Where was I? A diversity club. Yeah, so that club also started as a committee in leadership. They asked me if I would, you know, give them my opinion on the posters they were making or some of the things that they wanted to do in their committee. So then it kind of evolved to a club, and we've changed our name to the Advocacy Club from Diversity Club. But the idea there is me and one of the counselors. We have a Project Aware counselor who work with this group, and they think of like what we want to learn about to be advocates for people in our community or school. We just went on a field trip last week to the Ziebwing Center. So we got that tour. And we meet every other week to reflect on the stuff we do, plan what else we want to learn about, and we talk about current events. Last year, they found some books, children's books, focused on a few different diversity topics. And then we had high school volunteers go over to the elementary in Shepherd to read different diverse books to some of the classes there. And that went really well. So it's always a highlight for me because I don't plan that stuff. I just help them facilitate it, but it's just the stuff that the kids want to do to improve our school. And it just makes me happy that they wanted me to help them with that.
Yeah, and always so meaningful when it comes from them, right? Like when you are the facilitator, right? We didn't give you much time to talk about your challenges other than math attitudes. Was there anything you wanted to add there?
I mean, I guess for me, one of the challenges that I came into was just like behaviors. Like, I don't know. I've always considered myself an easygoing. Like I can talk to people pretty easily. Like I can hold a conversation with anyone. But once I was put in a classroom with 30 people who are all talking to me and talking at me and to each other all the time, then it became a little bit of a challenge sometimes when, yes, we do have to rein it in and learn math also in addition to being friends and talking to people and having fun at school. We have to do class in class sometimes, and high schoolers don't always love that. So I've been getting better, but I'd just say like managing a large group of people has been a little bit of a challenge for me.
So here comes my favorite part. Maddie just got done sharing how classroom management has been a challenge, managing large groups of people. And I want you to think about what your response might be to this. If you were her mentor teacher giving advice, or an armchair expert, we'll allow that for a minute, what would you tell her to do? Okay, have your first response? Here's Maddie.
This year I'm trying to do just more hands-on, making things more fun now that I've had a couple years of getting comfortable with like the schedule and the content and pacing of things. Now I feel like I can do more fun stuff and try and change it that way. So my ultimate goal is to just make math better for learning. I just know a lot of people have the issue with doing the same thing in math from when you're in elementary to high school and just kind of like learning these skills and practicing them and then taking a test on it. So I'm trying to add in more variety, and I think that's going well. So I just feel like, I don't know, I think back to being a STEM scholar sometimes and just trying to do like an imaginative activities, and even if they're not the same kind of things that we would do in the makerspace with elementary kids, like it's all, I don't know, it's all the same in education. Like even the things that we do with elementaries, you just have to make it more advanced for high schoolers who'd have more knowledge. So that's always fun. I'm just trying to make it better, more enjoyable. And it's more enjoyable for me too, when we can do something that's better, that's more fun.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Teach Wonder. We're so glad you're here. We started this podcast in the hopes of meeting educators where they are. Busy schedules and distance can make it hard to connect. If you appreciated what you heard today, please feel free to share this podcast with a colleague. And if you're interested in connecting with us in real life and outside of your phone, you're in luck. We have 3 summer PD options that might be perfect for you. We've linked them in the show notes, but you can find them by visiting our website, cmich.edu/STEMED, and clicking on the Teachers in Schools button, and then clicking on Teacher Professional Development.